Good morning. Dan, all we got to do is say, you're not preaching, and we're serving food, and look at who shows up. It's amazing. Maybe looking for a new preacher here pretty soon. Who knows? I want to welcome everybody to the John, Ed, and Amory Three Ring Circus here this morning. I'll give you a little foreshadowing. John's going to come up and do some two-column proofs for us, and then Ed's going to sing a song. I'm just the opening act for everybody here today. So, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Amory Brooks, or as Perry Holcomb now refers to me as Shish, which is short for shish kebab. It's for those of you that do know me, you know I'm a pretty happy guy. I don't let too much get me down. One of those guys that can take lemons and make. No, lemonade's terrible. Limoncello, it's this Italian liquor. It's fantastic. Renee, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Yeah. Some of you may remember a pastor we had here a while back by the name of Cy Rogers. Cy, before every service, he would walk up and down the aisles and talk to everybody and see how their family's doing and what you were doing for the past week. And one day he comes by, and I'm sitting right over here in my normal seat. And he pats me on the shoulder, and he says, Amory, you're always a happy guy. You don't let too much get to you. You're not ever very sad. He said, what's the secret? And I looked him straight in the eye, and I told him, Cy, it's heavy medication. And in typical Cy fashion, he patted me on the shoulder, said good job, and went on to talk to Sammy Tucker. So Warren Zevon, American singer-songwriter who most famous for the 1970s hit Werewolves of London. That tells you how bad the music was in the 1970s that was a hit. He was dying of cancer. And he had decided that the last public appearance he was going to make was on his good buddy the David Letterman show. And he's on David Letterman. David Letterman had interviewed him, had talked to him about his life and writing songs, and finally asked the question that most interviewers would ask someone who is passing away. Do you have any advice for the young people of today? And Warren Zevon said, enjoy every sandwich. In other words, find joy in everything. No matter how small you think it is, find joy in it. Enjoy every sandwich. Our Sunday school class studies the Upper Room devotional, mostly because it's free in the back of the church. Not that it's any good. No, it's a real good devotional. We've been doing it for a couple years, and we're inundated with a certain passage. About every month or two this comes up, and sometimes it's in the same week. It is Jeremiah 29:11. Most of you know it, for I know the plans that I have for you. Everybody knows the first part, but the second part of that verse is just as important, if not more important. It says, plans to prosper and not do harm, plans to give you hope and a future. God not only has control and knows what's going to go on in your life, you're going to be prosperous. What a great feeling to have. And with that, knowing that, how could we be in a bad mood? Well, about 3 months ago, as some of you may know, something happened in my life that could have jeopardized my otherwise peachy demeanor. I was involved in a farm equipment accident, left me in the hospital for a couple of weeks. I was unconscious for most of that, drug-induced unconsciousness, but still unconscious, and obviously unable to make decisions for myself. I wasn't able to take those lemons and make lemonade, or as Renee prefers, limoncello. However, this led to one of the greatest gifts in my life, and all of you were a part of it. While I was in the hospital, I didn't just have the injuries that I was suffering from. Every day, the doctors would come in and give the progress to my family. And, you know, one day I had developed an infection that they couldn't identify, and they were going to send off to the CDC. I had kidney failure, and they were talking about putting me on dialysis. I had blood pressure issues. I couldn't get the blood pressure back up. It was something different every day. That was impeding the progress of my body healing. And all this occurred while I was sedated. I had no idea what was going on and had no control over it. Here's where all of you came into play. When my family would get the word of the daily issue, They would send the notice out to family and friends, prayer lists, Craigslist, eBay, want ads, whatever they could find. And by the end of that day, that problem was pretty much done. We could move on to the different problem. A couple of seconds that you took out of your lives to say a small prayer on my behalf made all the difference in the recovery. That small blessing that each of you bestowed upon me allowed me to be here today. Without your prayers, I would not be standing here. That's one of the greatest gifts that I've ever received. But the Lord already knew that, because he has plans for all of us to prosper, and he gives us hope and a future. Most of you know I'm a Clemson fan, born and bred, raised from birth. My blood runs orange. I couldn't accept Ed's garnet blood while I was in the hospital. I had to have special blood brought in. Sorry, Ed. But the greatest coach that mankind has ever known, Dabo Swinney, not Newt Rockne or any of the other guys, but Dabo Swinney, has a saying, "Let the light that shines in you be brighter than the light that shines on you." The light that shines in you is going to radiate out. It cannot be contained inside of you and brightening everything around you. When you take the time to pray for someone who cannot pray for themselves, you are letting a little of that light shine. And I'm so thankful for it. Never forget the power of prayer. No matter how small you think the prayer may be, it may mean the world to someone else. It may help someone else to enjoy one more sandwich. Let us pray. Dear Lord, let us remember to take the time to give the gift of prayer to those who need it. Let us remember that you know the plans in store for all of us and that they are to prosper. And let us remember to enjoy every sandwich. In your heavenly name we pray. Amen.
Glory, now save day, come glory. Well, good morning, everybody. You better watch out what you ask for, because you might get it. This has been a long time coming. I asked Dan for 2 months, when can we talk? And he said, we had to get enough people to talk. I said, we got... I guess he's waiting for Avery to get hurt. But... I hear. Okay. All right, it's closed. I didn't take public speaking like Avery did, but as I look around the audience, I see Avery come up with a few jokes there that I'm going to tell one here on Trudy Bales. Trudy, I say, about 30 years ago, over another church, she said, Eddie, I want you to sing at my funeral. And the next week I said, are you sick yet? And so today, 30 years later, I'm going to ask her, are you sick yet? Because my voice is getting worse and worse. But anyhow, Trudy, I do hope I'm around when you need me, but I'm going to, let's have a prayer before I start. Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thy will. Oh, my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done, thy will be done. Amen. The role of faith plays a big part in our speech. I know the power of prayer, as Avery said, that's going to be our topic for all of us, because it's a big part of our everyday life. But I went into the ER at the Memorial Hospital, and then I had food poisoning. That's what I thought. I eat some lamb. I never had no lamb before because I couldn't afford it, but I had some lamb this day because it was in the line when I picked it up. And then that's the only thing I know it could have been, because I was just deathly sick. And that's the only thing I knew that I had different. I'm never sick. But this day I was just bending over sick. Mom thought I had a kidney stone because she had 16 of them and she knew what it bent over meant. But anyhow, we went to the ER and they sent me on to the hospital. Said, you got a gallbladder messed up. Gallbladder? I didn't know I had a gallbladder, but and don't take any operation lightly, because this was supposed to be an easy operation, almost like an outpatient operation. Just stick you 4 times and get that thing out and let's go home. But it wasn't that easy. my gallbladder exploded. They couldn't find it. I told them I didn't think I had one, but they took it, and that's what put me in the hospital. The poisoning from the gallbladder all over my body, and then that was on the 24th of November.
October,
I'm sorry. I didn't remember. But the 24th of October. And then on the 29th, I had an operation on my gallbladder. And this is when it's supposed to have been just a few minutes or just less than an hour operation. I think I stayed in there about 4 hours. But the doctor actually told my daughter and wife the next day, we're talking to them, they told them, they said that I died. I mean, they said my heart quit, and they thought they lost me, but they didn't. Here I am. But anyhow, it was a. And that I didn't know until the next day. I had a dream that night. I thought it was a dream, but it was so real. I had a guardian angel watching out for me. And folks, guardian angels are real. And I tried to find out who this was. I mean, my grandmother, my kid's grandmother, my mother-in-law, she was a guardian angel to a lot of people, but that's the first one I thought about when I heard her. But this person kept calling me Albert. And everybody knows Albert was my daddy. It wasn't me. So that wasn't the right one. And the next one was Miss Irene Seeley. She was a guardian angel to everybody. Everybody in this church knew her. But then I got to think, it couldn't have been Irene, because she called me Eddie Boy. She said, Eddie Boy, ooh, Marvin just loved to hear you sing. I mean, that was just Irene's way. And everybody heard that. It brought back memories. I was in the hospital. She was in the hospital one time, and I went to see her. And I was messed up her way to the door. She couldn't see out the door. She said, move back a little bit. She said, I got parades going up down that hall. And she said, I said, what you mean? She said, a bunch of men going down through her. She said, they don't got no backs to their shirts. And she said, move out of the way. And so I guess I was in the way. So, and one more life I want to have here is in the other church, Dorman Mahaffey and Pete Elrod, both of them archives, and they were both sitting in the pews, and I don't know if y'all remember, I ain't gonna name no name, but Woodrow was his name. But he looked out and he said, Pete, would you wake up Dorman? And Pete said, no, sir, you wake him up. He said, why? He said, you put him to sleep. So he didn't want to. As I look out here, a bunch of friends I got to. Max Snyder, would you quote that quote that you quoted me on the phone? I don't have it.
Luke 1:37. Luke.
Nothing is impossible with God. That's also in Matthew, too. Think about the 29th chapter of Matthew. With God, nothing's impossible. So that's the reason we're here today. I know a whole lot of you, but John, Ed, and Avery, we know that the power of God is in this place. And but I got some other names here. I said I wouldn't want to name too many names, but because I'd leave somebody out, and it'd take a few minutes to do all that. But I've got some other names that was come across my head as angels that I had thought about. And one of them was Peggy Delaney. And the reason I come up with Peggy, because every time I looked up, Peggy was sending me another card. And this church is, they say people don't send cards, but I should have brought that bucket full that I've got, because there's a bunch of cards that I got, me and Sandy both. But, and Sue Riddle, her name came and face came up as I was looking through my cards. I've got Faye Whittington. I got Margaret Baker. But Margaret's the only one that would have called me Albert, and that's at Walmart. Or she didn't know me good enough. But all the rest of them, Sandra McNeil, they would have called me Eddie or Ed. So I kind of ruled them out as being the one that I was looking for that came to me that night. They kept saying over and over, "Albert, are you all right? Can I do anything? I said, "No, everything's fine." I mean, I guess I lied because I wasn't fine, but I didn't mean to. If somebody's out there it was my guardian angel that night, I'm sorry if I lied. But it was just so real. And I'm still looking for that voice. I asked my daughter if there was a woman. It was overlooked my operating. She said no. She didn't see no. I didn't think so, because it was just doctors. But and about 2.5 weeks later from that operation, I went to the hospital, and I had another operation on the blood clots. I lost a finger, which, I still got finger, but I'm all right. It's I wasn't aware of that operation. And I stayed about 2.5 weeks that I don't remember a thing. And then I guess it was late November, they put me in the rehab. I went to, was it ERH or NHC? It's one of them initials. But I went into the nursing home, and that was that's where everybody winds up. Nobody wants to be there. But they told me I needed to learn. I'd been in the hospital 2 or 3 weeks already. And need to learn how to walk again. And I had 2 legs and couldn't walk. And several times in the next few weeks, I visited the emergency room. I developed a sore on my leg, and I didn't think much of it because I've had sores on my leg before, but this came from the operation of the gallstone, I went back and forth to the ER in the next 6 weeks, and then about the last time I went, about three quarters of my leg was broke out, and I went through some painful days. The nurses worked on me. They had every day they would wrap my leg. I had several rolls of gauze. I know my gauze bill went up, but then I'd have to go to PT, and I was so painful. Here I was going to PT to learn to walk, and I couldn't even with help, my walker, I couldn't even walk across the room. I had two legs in. And couldn't even walk across the room. And they tried to make me. They said, "You have to do this or you have to leave." I said, "Well, let's go. Let's leave. I can't do it." I said, "I've run marathons and can't walk across the room." And Judy Walls, I guess I hope you're here, Diane Ford, all these pretty girls, I ran with them, and I was as good a runner at that time as they was. They finally caught up with me and outrun me, but I was running with Judy down in Columbia. Diane might have been there too, but we went to the ball game afterwards. I got them in. I got them in free. They had on their running shorts, and they let them in free. So I guess it was they wanted to make the place look better. But it was fun getting them on the 50-yard line and them Clemson girls and let them watch a good Gamecock game. But it might be the last one they ever saw. We might have won that, but I had a PT guy that was, I don't know where any of y'all ever been in service or not, but this guy was Shannon said he was a drill sergeant that you wanted to hate. And if you ever saw him outside of there, you don't tell him what you might do. But this guy, he told me I had to do something that I couldn't do. He kept on. And I think he hurt me more than he helped me. Because I'd come back out of there, and then I'd have to change my gauze again. He had me bleeding worse than I was when I went in. But this little nurse that kept working on me, I had some beautiful nurses. They worked hard, and they didn't just do their, they done this because they wanted to, not because they had to. They come back off of a vacation one day. The head nurse came off just to be the one that dressed my leg because she knew how hard it was on me. Every day there was something new. And this this one little nurse, I loved her to death, and she will, I've never heard her say anything out of the way. She would have a prayer before she worked on me. I know she's a Christian, and I kept a wash rag in my mouth because that was my security blanket. I bit on it just to keep from hollering, and she looked at me over there. I had a tear in my eye, and she looked at me, and she said, "Mr. Ed, you's the meanest son of a bitch I've ever known." And I knew what she was trying to say, but she didn't know how to say it. But I was told not to say that word in church, but it wouldn't have been my personal. I'm sorry, Shannon, but she said it, and she didn't know I'd say it in front of 300 people, but she was kind of whispering it where her supervisor wouldn't hear her because she didn't know what she might do. But anyhow, that was her play in this thing. And she would just, I mean, she was, I never heard her say nothing before. I mean, she didn't have damn in her vocabulary. But I knew she was trying to tell me how strong I was, but she didn't know what a wimp I was either, because that was hurting. I just didn't. I was this close to my next door, had two beds in that room, and all that was separating us was a curtain. And it must have been bad, because every time we got to working on my leg, he left. He got up and found somewhere else to be. I don't know whether that was by design or he done it himself, but he didn't want to hear it. And I didn't want him to hear it either. But at my roommate and his family, and I found out since then, his name was Moore. He was 94 years old, had a birthday while he was in there. They had a big party for him. And I found out since then he died. And I didn't know about it till after I was trying to go see him, because I thought at the time he was a mean man, but he knew exactly what he wanted. And when somebody come to give him a pill, he had to know what it was. And if he didn't like it or didn't know the name of it, he wouldn't take it. And these people that worked on me, one night the nurse came in there and she said, "I've come to change your bandages." I said, "Where's your help?" She said, "I'm it." I said, "You're not changing my bandage." I said, "It takes four people to hold me down and change my bandage." She said, "Well," she said, "I ain't got no help." I said, "Well, you're not changing my bandage," because it was bad. It's all I could do to keep stay in bed when I done it. But and the next thing I got is Christmas was coming up pretty soon, and that's always been the best day of my life is Christmas or Christmas Eve. And that's with my kids and grandkids and my son and daughter and daughter-in-law. That was just our big day, Christmas Eve. And they said, "We'll get to go home." Oh, boy, I had to get an ambulance to carry me home. And I went home. And to my surprise, the men of the church had built me a ramp. I mean, that's another God's praise. I kept wondering how I was going to get in, but I didn't know at that time I was going to lose my leg. And but I had a ramp that I could get up and down. It looked like a speedway. It was so big. And I think it is sometime when he carried me up and down, he lets me go. And I had a lot of thoughts at night. It went through my head while this is around Christmas, that you just get to think about, get a feeling sorry for yourself, I guess. I was always upbeat, but before my eyes came my grandkids and my wife and daughter and son and daughter-in-law. They all just flashed before my eyes, and I just needed to talk to somebody, or instead of being under them walls at the nursing home. So Christmas Eve was a good day to be at home. And I know my papa, we call him papa, my dad-in-law, he told me before he died, he said, I want you to take care of, I guess I was the one to take care of his stuff, but he said, I want you to take care of Evelyn on Christmas. I said, you know how good she likes Christmas? I said, yeah, I do. We all like Christmas. And so we was just always, everything we could scrape up to give her, because she liked to give all the grandkids and great-grandkids and great-great-great, ever how many she has, she wanted to give them all something. And then it got to be where if you give them gift cards or money, it was better because they get what they wanted. And they liked it better, too. So we saw to it that she had that kind of stuff for her. And so after that, 4 weeks later, after I got home, Sandy went in the hospital. That was after Christmas, but we didn't know. I didn't know what happened. But they said she failed coming to see me. So God works in mysterious ways, because that saved her life. My leg saved her life, because she had two operations that night on her. Whatever it was, her colon, she said, okay. I don't know where I got one of them either, but they worked on her colon, and she had two operations, emergency operations. And so we was in the same hospital at the same time, and they said, your wife's just about four rooms up the street. I said, let's go see her. And they wheelchaired me up there. And we got to eat lunch together several days. And I tell you what, I lost 50 pounds in, I guess it's 3 months. And three more months, I'd lost 50 more, because I didn't know you could make chicken 29 different ways and taste the same. It was bad, but I got real used to that insure, so the stock went up at my house on insure. So, and that stuff works, because I lived on it after I found it.
I just want you to tell them. I'm getting hungry. I want you to tell them what you said the first Sunday you came back to church. Do you remember?
I said so much, I don't know.
You said, don't feel sorry for me.
Yeah, don't. Folks, you turned it off. You don't want me to hear it.
There you go. Don't feel sorry for
me. Yeah, yeah. I told him that, don't feel sorry for me. He said, I got more socks than I need.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. I'm going to get you a Clemson one to go with that one. So you need a spare, right?
I still have a lot more to say.
I know. Well, we'll have time at lunch. And when we go to lunch, the families and the speakers will be at the round tables in the middle, so y'all can come and greet them there. But we'll continue on with the service because we have John that we want to hear from too. So thank you very much.
Good morning. Is it still morning? There's no way y'all gonna want me to say all that I'm prepared to say. I might as well put that away. This is amazing. One of the things this morning, and this isn't what I prepared, but to see the choir and the praise band singing and working together, isn't that something? I loved it, huh? You know what it makes me think? If that can happen, then Democrats and Republicans can work together. Y'all sounded great. Yeah, I'm supposed to be sitting right over there next to Haskell, but you know, I can give up one Sunday, I guess, singing with them. I'm not going to say all this because we need to eat here in a few minutes. But the entertainment part of this program is over now. I think we've been thoroughly entertained, and Ed and Amory both just did a wonderful job. My main thoughts this morning, I want to tell you, and I'm going to do something that I probably anybody speaking shouldn't do. I'm going to apologize for a couple of things before I even do them. I probably get emotional, and bear with me if I do that. And if I run too long, please forgive me. 2 years ago and 2 months. Okay, I'm sorry. That better? On May the 22nd, 2017, Yvonne took me to the emergency room. I had been fighting or dealing with a back pain for about 7 weeks, thinking I had a pull muscle or a strain or something, and found out just a few days before I went in that I had a mass on my spine. And so that night, the neurosurgeon that was on duty at the hospital at Memorial, it was Memorial Ed, he operated on my back and took about a 3-centimeter mass off my back that had eaten through the bone and had caused me to be numb from my toes up to about right here. And I still have that numbness. I had to, at the very beginning of all this, I'm like Ed, I had to learn to walk again and everything. And so, you know, I probably don't show it too much now, but I'm about 50% numb from here down. Still have feeling even in my toes, but I have to deal with it. 3 days later, we got a pathology report. Doctor came in. Gave me the news of what I had. And if you listen to the name of this, that's scary enough. What I had, according to the doctor, where did I write it down? Maybe I can remember it. What I had was stage 4, according to him, colon cancer. And I need to read this thing because I cannot remember it. It was a high-grade, poorly differentiated neuroendocrine carcinoma. Small cell, very aggressive, and very rare. It was rare enough that Jeannie, my daughter, who's here, did some research, found one other person in South Carolina in the past year or 2 years that had the same thing I did. So it didn't look good. Doctors told me I had about a 50-50 chance to live 6 months, maybe a 25% chance for a year. So that was devastating news. That afternoon, that was a Thursday, that afternoon my family had been there. They left. Yvonne, my wife, left. By the way, Yvonne and I meant to say this, Yvonne and I have been members here at Bethesda for 41 years now. So we one of the older ones, I guess. But you can imagine, I think, what I was thinking about this time. Everybody left. I'll just lay in there with my thoughts, kind of like what Ed said a while ago. And I wasn't thinking good thoughts. I had my little pity party. Got through that. And I guess like a lot of people, I kind of went through a period of being mad. I was mad at everybody. I was mad at my original doctor for not diagnosing this thing earlier. I was mad at myself for not reacting sooner, doing something that might have made a difference. I was mad at the world. I was mad at God. That was wrong. God didn't just let this happen. It just, cancer is just a bad thing. It happens. But the more I thought about it, and the more I dealt with what was there, I began to think, you know, this is stupid. I'm wasting a lot of energy and thought on the wrong things. And instead of looking back at what might have been, what could have been, I decided to look forward. I'm like Amory now. I'm gonna use Dabo for a minute. He said a lot of crazy things, but one of the things that he says, and he's repeated this a number of times, that you've got to have windshield mentality. And he explains it this way. A windshield is big. You got all this glass in front of you. You got a little rear view mirror. It might be 1/20th the size of the windshield. And that tells you. You might want to look back once in a while, but what you really need to see is what's in front of you. So my thoughts were, I'm going to fight this thing. I'm going to meet it head on. So the main thing I want to share with you this morning is what I decided to do after that. I called my wife Yvonne on Friday morning and I said, get the family together. I got something I need to talk to them about. So she said she would call. So later she let me know, said, we can't get everybody together today, but everybody can be there at noon Saturday. So I said, great, have them in my room. And everybody, my three children, their spouses, my sister Peggy, her husband, and my Uncle Don, who's sitting here today. This is hard for me. What I told them was that I wasn't accepting these numbers given me by the doctor. And I wasn't just going to lay around and wait on this cancer to do its thing. I was going to fight it head on, and I needed their help. And I said, okay, you guys let me talk, and we'll discuss it later. I'll answer questions. And I probably talked for 25 or 30 minutes. I'm not going to do that now, I promise you. But I said, I've thought about this because I thought all afternoon, all evening, Thursday, all night long, I don't think I got any sleep. And I went over it and over it in my mind what I wanted to say on Friday. I said to them, we're going to fight this thing. And you notice I said we. We're going to fight this thing on three fronts. Faith, diet, medicine, and attitude. And I said, I need your help. I expect your help. And so I talked about each one of these. No way could we do what we had to do. No way could I do what I had to do without God's help. Not only God's help, but my family, my church family, my friends, and everybody that knew me, and I knew would put up prayers for me. And I told them, prayer is going to be important, and I expect you to do your part. I'll do my part. And by the way, I said my prayers, but my prayer to God was pretty simple. I didn't ask God to come heal me. I just said, God, give me a chance. If you'll give me a chance, we'll do what we have to do. He answered that prayer. The prayers that have gone up for me, I know, have been unbelievably numbered. I could give you so many examples, but I'll give you one quick example. John, my oldest son, has a lot of Citadel friends. He went to the Citadel, and he hears from them. He's still in contact with many of them. A number of times, he's called me and said, Dad, I just heard from Donald Corey. I could go on with a lot of names. And said, every time one of these guys calls me, the first thing they want to know, how's your dad? And they always say, excuse me, Dan. They always say, I'm praying for your dad, and I've got my Sunday school class, or in some cases, I've got my whole church praying for him. And that's got to be hundreds of people that I've never met, never heard of, don't really know me. Isn't that awesome? I mean, and it's not just John. I've got friends that tell me that all the time. That so many people I ask it. And it just blows my mind. I mean, I know it's got to be in the thousands, but it just amazes me. The power of prayer, as Amory and Ed both have said. The power of prayer is awesome. It's unbelievable. The second thing that we talked about that I told them was diet. What you put in your body And more importantly, what you don't put anybody is very important. John and Jeannie both did a lot of investigating over the internet and checking about diets. And we looked at a lot of things and kind of developed a diet that I would go on. And most of you have probably, you know, heard of different diets. We didn't really have a name for it. All I know is that I couldn't have any sweets, nothing with sugar in it, no bread, no red meat, no dairy products. So it didn't leave a whole lot. I'm like Ed now. Boy, I ate a lot of chicken and fish, and I'm telling you, but I like fish, thank goodness. And I did find out that, and it was very interesting, that the spectrum of foods from one end to the other, the best thing you can eat, according to what we found out, was broccoli. Never eaten broccoli in my life, can't stand to smell it, but guess what? I now eat broccoli. The worst thing you can put in your body, cancer loves it apparently, is sugar, and anything with sugar in it. For over a year, I was strict on that diet, and I really think it made a difference. Medicine. I didn't have a lot of say-so about medicine. I was up to the doctors and nurses, but right after we found out what I had, they did give me 2 rounds of chemotherapy. Chemotherapy's hell. Any of you that have ever taken it, it's unbelievable. Side effects, crazy. Doctor came in after the 2nd round of chemotherapy, told me it wasn't doing me any good. The cancer cells getting fat on it. I didn't tell the doctor, but I was almost glad to hear that, because that meant no more chemotherapy for me. I was glad to hear, and it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. We then decided to try immunotherapy. I had to be approved of the program, and I was. And luckily, the company that produces the medicine donated the medicine. And so 2 different pretty good length of times, one about 3.5 months, and then the next time later after I was in the hospital again, I got back on it for about 4 months. The immunotherapy, according to the doctor, after that 2nd time said that 70% of the cancer was gone. So the medicine, that part of the medicine really did the trick for me. It was good. Attitude. That might not seem to be as important as the other three, but I told my family that I wasn't sure what I had ahead of me. At that time, I didn't know what I was going to go through. I didn't know if I'd live long. But I said, I'm determined, and I'm going to do my best, but I might get down. And when I do, if I do, it's up to you guys to keep me going, pick me back up. Boy, did they ever do a super job. I can't thank my family enough for what all they have done for me. More than once, I said to Yvonne, I'm not sure I want to go on. It's hard. You know, what I was looking for was sympathy. not what I got. She said to me, have you gone through all of this? She said, have you gone through all of this for nothing? You going to give up? She said, you can't give up. You can't give up for yourself. You can't give up for me and the rest of us. That's what I needed to hear. I didn't need hugging and sweetness and coddling. I didn't need that. I needed a kick in the fanny. But she's been there. Every step of the way, she's been there. She's been a rock. I can't thank her enough for what she's done for me. I've tried to have a good attitude, and I really believe that that makes a difference. There's an old saying, if you think you can, if you think you can't, most of the time you're right. And most of the time I felt like I could make it. And with God's help, I think I've made it. At least it's looking good now. I can't thank the people of this church enough for the support that they've given me. The visits in the hospital, the visits at my house. Ed said, cards, unbelievable. This Bethesda church is unbelievable when it comes to a card ministry. I probably got a wheelbarrow full at least. And 90% of them were from you folks. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your support. And I'm not going to name names like Ed did, but I could. And there's a number of you out there and a few people that are missing today that don't just send one card. They just keep coming, don't they, Ed? They just keep coming, and it's unbelievable. Let me get through, and I'll turn it back over to you. If Dan will let me. I want to finish with this. My good friend who lost the fight to cancer, Charlie Hendricks. Y'all remember Charlie, a lot of you. It didn't matter what he was going through, how bad things were. If you asked Charlie how he was doing, I know what y'all remember, and I feel that way. Anytime you ask Charlie, he'd say, I'm blessed. I'm truly blessed. I'll never forget Charlie or how he reacted. I wish he was still with us. We miss him. But folks, I've made it these 2 years and 2 months. I think at this point I'm cancer free. I'll find out in September. Thank you. We'll find out first week in September. I have a PET scan, and if all goes well and everything's negative from that report, then I'll really be feeling good. But that's, keep the prayers for me, please. But anyway, I'm blessed. I want to thank all of you for coming. This is just unbelievable. Look out there and see the faces that I'm looking at. But thank you for coming, and God bless every one of you. All right, Ed, what you got?